Hi, I'm Ruthie, and I have a recorder. Tune in Wednesdays from 4 to 5 to Out There. We'll meet people and plants around the streets and paths of Northampton, and we'll think about ways we can share the world. Here on Valley Free Radio, or archived online at weatherbeer.com/out there. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if they laugh at us. Let them take the bus and leave the sickle for us. They can have a Cadillac and T-Bud too. But give me my rocking bicycle for two. And thanks for tuning in today. It's Wednesday, December 26th. We're going to need a new calendar soon here in the studio, or I will have no idea what day it is, except for Wednesday. Wednesday, December 26th, 2018. Today is the first day of Kwanzaa. It's also Boxing Day in Canada, whatever that means. I forgot to look that one up. So today's the first day of Kwanzaa. I believe there's 7 days of Kwanzaa. And today, let's see, it says Umoja means unity. Today you put a black candle placed right in the middle of red and green candles in Kanara, and you light it today if you're celebrating Kwanzaa. If you're celebrating Kwanzaa, you should give me a call at the studio and tell me how you celebrate it, because I'm not obviously very educated, but I'm trying to be. All right, so what else do we have for today's show? Oh yeah, yesterday was Christmas by lots of traditions, and the day before, Noche Buena. Here's a 15-second clip from yesterday's meal, Christmas meal at Edwards Church. It was a big free community meal. Delicious.
Plenty of food
for a second. We have enough wonderful
desserts to feed an army.
What?
The food. It was great. I didn't have to cook anything.
Thanks to all the people who fed me in the last few days. I'm not going to go into everything I ate, but it was all good. There was a lot of food thrown away, too, so I kind of feel bad about that. But maybe we can do better next year. Maybe we can do better today, every day. Freeze those leftovers. That's what I did with the leftovers. I just stick them in the freezer, and then little portions, I'll eat them for the next week. All right. Okay, here's one little story from today. I was doing my Fettle People route, and I was going down the street. I was going down Stry Ave, and I looked in front of this house, and there was a cat that was trotting along the sidewalk next to the house with a bird in its mouth, and the bird was still twitching, and I figured the bird was probably pretty well injured now, being gripped in the jaws of a cat. And so at first I went by as I looked at it, because I was like, well, what am I going to do, chase the cat? Even if it drops the bird's going to probably be injured, and then what am I going to do with an injured bird? But then I did a quick U-turn, and I dropped my bike and trailer and ran towards the cat, and the cat dropped the bird, and the bird flew away and flew up to a tree. I was surprised. I have another short little story, but the theme of today's show, I have a bunch of interviews around the topic, do you feel invisible? Are there ways in which you feel invisible sometimes in this society or your life or this town or culture, whatever? And I got a bunch of different responses to that. But before we get to that, here's a little story of the week from Alex Jarrett. Well, story from Sunday.
Late Sunday night, I was riding the PVTA 43 bus, and there were not very many of us on the bus. And as we were going through UMass, everyone else but me got off, presumably to go to the Craig's Door shelter. But there was one man who seemed pretty drunk. He was maybe in his 50s, and he wasn't making any sense, just sort of mumbling and talking to various people and not recognizing people that he clearly knew, other people clearly knew him. And then just before we got to the spot, it appeared he had like gone into some sort of state. He just kind of like fell over and wasn't exactly unconscious or asleep, but just not responding to anyone, you know, saying, you've got to get up, you've got to get up. So then the bus driver stopped, I guess figuring that now is as good as any to make sure he got off the bus rather than Amherst College. I decided, well, I'll just ride from here. I had offered to help him, but he was pretty large, so two of us couldn't easily try to get him up. We would just set him, laying him down on the grass outside anyway. So I guess the bus driver decided to call the police. As I was out there, I decided to hang around for a little bit in case I could help. There was an ambulance that I saw going by, so I waved it down. The ambulance pulled over, I asked them if they needed any additional help, but they said they're fine. So I don't know what happened after that. But I was glad the ambulance got there before the police. I feel like they're the people who would help figure out the situation.
Thank you for sharing that, Alex. While I'm thinking about Alex, and he's my housemate, co-homeowner now. So a couple of weeks ago, I interviewed Alex about the fact that we had just finished paying off our mortgage with the help from a lot of other people. And yeah, there's been like 30 different people that have lived with us over the last 13 years. I feel like I should always put the disclaimer that our mortgage and the house that we so-called own is all on stolen land or shared land. So since that we finished paying it off, we had a meeting with one of our other housemates who's been living with us for maybe 3 years. And so, yeah, so we used to all pay $300 or $400 a month. Usually there'd be four or five of us living there. And so we want to continue paying. Now we only have to pay $600 a month to cover insurance and carrying costs and stuff. But we're sort of accustomed to paying at least $300 a month. So, all right. So our new draft agreement is that Alex and I will each pay $300 a month to cover the basic costs, and that other house residents aren't required to pay anything to live there, but that Alex and I suggest that residents put money or labor toward a fund that all of us together decide what to do with. We'll meet once a month or less often if we decide to make decisions about how to spend this fund. Some ideas we have are reparations, house projects, helping start other cooperative projects, giving cash to Ruthie or Alex if they're traveling for more than 2 weeks so that they don't have to pay when they're away. So the suggested amount to pay towards the fund is $300 a month, or labor equivalent for any portion. This can be adjusted higher or lower based on your big picture financial situation. That means taking into account access to resources, family wealth, historical privilege, and discrimination. And when traveling for 2 weeks or more, if other people may stay in your room, then subtract a prorated amount for the time you are away. And since house residents are legally guests, Ruthie and Alex will, upon request, sign a document agreeing that the resident may stay here until a certain time. That gives some security that Ruthie and Alex won't change their minds, even if a resident chooses to pay nothing into the fund. And Alex and I, Ruthie, have a goal of transitioning the house to a legal cooperative where every resident would be a member. All right, that's just a draft. Nothing legally binding. Don't go telling everybody that that's what we're doing, because, you know, well, it probably is, but we don't know for sure. All right, so question of the week that I was asking people. This is, there's a lot more people I would like to ask. There was no effort to sculpt this radio show into anything beautiful. It's just coming at you like it came at me. So we will start with, all right, here we go. Most of the people that I interviewed, they didn't introduce themselves. And so these are mostly anonymous interviews.
I feel invisible when I don't see someone who look like me or who act like me, who think like me, not represented in major media or book or any public place. Also, when our holidays are not represented in or celebrated in society or in wherever you go. I feel invisible.
Yeah. What about in the face of consumer culture?
Oh, I feel definitely invisible, or I should say powerless, because I do not celebrate Christmas, but I feel like I'm forced into or coerced into this activity or culture.
And as someone like with a child, your desires, your wishes, your desires for your child and the ways that you want to celebrate with your child, then like other people have other ideas of how Christmas should be celebrated with children. How is that for you?
Because I don't have experience, and because I'm not from this culture, I feel invisible, because they will say, well, this is our way, American way. So I feel like I won't be able to do differently. And also in this culture, anything, if I do differently, I will be either called as a mother who neglects child, or even worse, child abuse, or the mom who doesn't love your child. So I feel like definitely as someone who is from a different culture, I feel invisible as a parent.
So after that interview with my friend, she called me to add some things. She wanted to add and let people know, like, she says, even when people of my culture are shown in the media, I feel invisible or misunderstood, because often they don't represent me. It's like they're a stereotype. The stereotype doesn't represent me. So often the representations are either a stereotype or they're extraordinary examples, or like very Americanized or popular in the dominant culture. Also, her daughter, I asked her daughter, who's 5, I think, or 6, but her daughter didn't say anything, but her mom said that the daughter often feels invisible when people don't call her by her name, especially other foster parents, like the daughter was staying with some other foster parents while her normal mom, foster mom, was out of town, and they often didn't use her name, so that hurt a little bit. And next.
When do I feel invisible?
If you do, maybe you don't.
Yeah. Well, I think I feel more invisible than I am when I go to meetings to speak, or just try to talk to any sort of official people. I definitely feel like it means nothing. No one's listening. But in the feedback that I often get, I hear that actually people did listen, did hear. It's more, maybe it's more than I expect, that I expect to be invisible. But I'm not.
That makes me think of, that reminds me of a talk that I went to at Smith College a year or two ago, by a Black woman who was like, white people, come on, you got to use that white privilege. You're not invisible. You have this white privilege, so get up there and use it.
Exactly. Even if we feel like we are invisible, we actually have this privilege that is not related to our feelings.
Anything you want to share, sir?
I guess there are times when I feel invisible, when the only thing I can think of is when, you know, I meet the same person over and over again, you know, this feeling, and you know exactly who they are because you've met them before, and they still don't know who you are or remember meeting you, which is kind of a bad feeling. But I was thinking recently, like, it says more like sometimes I'll meet someone and I know like their name and who their partner is and if they have kids and where they work, and they have no idea who I am, even though like we've probably introduced ourselves. And I think that it just says more about my, like, I've decided that that's actually speaks to my powers of observation, and that, like, you know, yeah. I'm just paying attention. And yeah. sometimes mm-hmm. people aren't. And that's not saying something negative about me, like that I'm not worthy of remembering. It's just that, you know, I just am paying more attention than sometimes other people are.
I like that perspective, because I'm one of those people who, like, I'm terrible at recognizing people that I've had a conversation with earlier the same day sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to hurt anybody, but mm-hmm. I just can't keep things straight sometimes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe I'm paying attention to other things, but yeah, it's not a reflection of anyone's worth.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a little rock and roll break. That was a little Genesis you're listening to out there here on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. I've been talking about people feeling invisible. A couple of comments that people gave me that weren't recorded. A friend of mine told me how he feels like he's invisible when it comes to his economic needs or transportation needs. He doesn't have a car or drive. Another person told me that he feels invisible when it comes to hiring decisions at a place that he's applied to hire again and again and again, and he sees other people hired instead of him time after time after time. The next interview I have about invisibility is with a friend of a friend. This one's about 15 minutes long. And thanks for listening to Out There today. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5, followed by Democracy Now! At 5 o'clock, and preceded by Mary Rewired from 3 to 4.
So my son, he's 9 years old, and he's a little bit smaller size than the other kids in his class because he is 1 year younger than them. He was ahead. He asked me the beginning of the week, like, I am not feeling comfortable. Can you talk to the principal to make me go to a younger class? Because I feel invisible. So I tried to understand what does he mean by invisible. So he started explaining and telling me how hard it is to be talking to somebody and they walk away. How hard it is that they are sitting in circles. Somebody gets up, they just step over his hand and they don't say sorry. He just felt invisible, and I wanted to verify that it's really what he's feeling. He's not mixing feelings because he's too young to understand some of his feelings. Once he told me that, I wanted to help him understand this feeling and deal with it, because in my perspective, everybody at some point in their life feels invisible. And younger generation are more susceptible to feeling that because of technology, because of the surrounding, and because of less extended family communication compared to our generation or the generations before. So I felt that I have to help him navigate this feeling, because it is going to be an essential tool of survival for him. For us who we lived in more dynamic human interaction society, we still feel invisible at some point. I'm almost 40 years old, and I do feel invisible at work. Sometimes with peers, sometimes with superiors, sometimes with my social circle at home. Sometimes I feel I don't fit anywhere. And that feeling never dragged me down, because I was able to navigate through this feeling early in my life. And I wanted to convey this experience to my son. Feeling invisible for a younger generation is very, very crushing, because they depend on other means to feel that they are accepted and wanted and acknowledged, like the social media and whatever comes with it. Sometimes you see them interacting with TV, which is for us, once we look at them, we did not do what they do. Like when a TV commercial comes, my kids ask me, is this for real? They don't have a fact check. They don't have a reality reference. Sometimes they are watching kids' shows and it tells them to jump up and down 10 times, and they get up and they jump up and down 10 times. Like, this is a real human being that is telling them this thing, and they feel that they need to comply. And once they face other humans, they are expecting what they expect from the machines, which is the machines are designed to accept you, to respond to you, to acknowledge your existence, like Alexa. Now everybody almost have Alexa in their home. Hey, Alexa, Alexa answers. But once you walk to your friend, you're 9 years old, you're 10 years old, you're fourth grader, fifth grader, you're almost getting into middle school and the teenaging harsh environment and being accepted, not accepted, all these things. And you walk to your friend and you say hi to them and they just walk away.
It's crushing. I can imagine that being crushing.
It is crushing. It's not just crushing. It's humiliating. It's insulting. And you would want to feel invisible, but you are feeling far worse feelings at this point. So feeling invisible for younger generation, and for parents to say you have to be strong, I don't think this is enough. They did not encounter what we encountered in our life. My kids lived through daycare. They were always in social circles, but they were always structured by adults. They are getting to becoming teenagers. They can't stay with each other and hang out without somebody supervising them 24/7, which is a very dangerous red line for them. Mm-hmm. My son started feeling invisible. He's a fifth grader. The third grader, he's still feeling fine. He's still feeling accepted. He doesn't have these feelings. The fifth grader is feeling like this because it is the time for the kids that they can mingle around. They can be in the playground by themselves. That one teacher can monitor 50 kids. It's fine. And he will not, or she will not be able to see what's going on with every single one. So it's not like direct supervision. Mm-hmm. And those firsthand experience of very harsh human interactions when a child is 10 years old, I think it's too late. It is way too late for a child to develop that emotional immunity. Mm-hmm. And for me as a mom, the most important thing is just to keep helping him accepting that feeling and not trying to seek acceptance, mm-hmm. instead of trying to seek, like, live with this feeling is better than living with seeking acceptance, mm-hmm. and being hit with rejection. Rejection is hard and they are not equipped yet to live through it. Mm-hmm. And I don't want him to meet with the wrong social group. He's 10. He can turn anyway and he will have some group that will accept him. I want him to be with the right people for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. I want him to reject the wrong people for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. So if he does not have that emotional immunity towards that specific feeling of feeling invisible, there are kids who would want to mean harm, mm-hmm. and they're going to be younger kids because he will go to middle school and he will be junior in middle school, mm-hmm. and... Mm-hmm. He is also younger than his peers, mm-hmm. so he is going to be an easier target, mm-hmm. if he doesn't have that emotional immunity. Yeah. We don't live in a perfect world. There are kids who are promoting randomly wide variety of bad things, mm-hmm. and there are kids who are being pressured to do these things. Sometimes they're not bad, but that's what they are doing because they have to. Somebody's pushing them to do that. And to find a person who isn't in an emotional need to be accepted in a circle and be always welcome, and it's the wrong circle, it can be damaging for them.
Sorry, I'm going to stop. Take a break in this interview for a minute, and I'll come back to it after a song. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruth Ewerdring. I've been playing some interviews about people talking about feeling invisible or their children feeling invisible. This is Eddie Grant.
Did it. Oh, everything happy and everything nice. Everything irate, a little sugar and spice. Oh, everything happy and everything nice. Everything irate, a little sugar and spice. See her down on the corner, she dressed for July.
A dance break. It's a little chilly here in the studio. Maybe I should close the window. It is December. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, and I've been playing some interviews with people talking about feeling invisible. And this is, I'm going to go back to the interview with my friend's sister, thinking a lot about like society and children growing up in the current culture, this culture, and trying to navigate some of those things.
Or any time. So I think it's very, very essential for parents also to talk about these things. A lot of parents like, my child is fine, my child is strong, my child is not just accepted, they are liked. Everybody likes my child is perfect. Nobody is perfect, mm-hmm. Children are harsh, and they are mean, not just by nature, by because they want to be different and unique. They don't have sometimes means to show that other than pushing on the other parties. Mm-hmm. So the most important advice for parents is to acknowledge where your child is and try to help them more than pushing on the school environment or other peers on accepting them.
I think it's interesting to think about what you say about technology, and it seems really ironic, like you're saying that kids feel more seen or responded to by technology than real human beings sometimes.
It is true. If you go, we go to social gatherings. My son tends to play with his age group, not with his school group, like with kids who are fourth graders and third graders. And the fifth graders will be looking at him and telling him mean things that you don't fit with us because you're playing with younger kids. And for him, his first tool of coping with this thing, he will go home, he will start playing on his tablet, he will open those group like Minecraft or those that you can play in groups, and mm-hmm. you can prevail over another party, you can communicate with others. He will be talking to that screen. I'm like, what are you doing? And he would be like, oh, my friend said a joke. So that's his first line of defense. Mm-hmm. I want to go somewhere that I want to be accepted.
Yeah.
You
also talked about coming from a more dynamic culture, and now it's how do we in this culture keep our humanity? You know, how do we keep practicing and valuing face-to-face interactions, even when they're painful? And, how do we value those? Should we value those more than an online, internet acceptance, or it feels like acceptance, but it's very limited in its scope, that kind of acceptance?
Well, it's very important to live through both mm-hmm. signs. Mm-hmm. Social acceptance through media is also tough. Mm-hmm. It's not always as easy. Mm-hmm. Like Facebook, like Instagram and things.
That can be super harsh, super harsh.
It has its own rules.
Right.
Like when I noticed at work, other engineers tend to send IMs, since everybody has IMs, instead of walking to each other's desks and talking mm-hmm. to each other. Because some of them, for me, I have English is not my first language, so I'd rather type appropriate English and edit it before hitting mm-hmm. send. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I see younger generation who are in their 30s and late 20s, they tend to do that more than us. Like, I would rather have few grammatical mistakes and interact with another engineer face to face to understand his whole perspective or her whole what is she trying to convey in the presentation or mm-hmm. that structural analysis, whatever it is. Like, what are you trying to mm-hmm. find? Mm-hmm. For them, they'd rather send 50 IM messages than walk into my desk, which mm-hmm. is it's the next cubicle uh-huh. from them. Uh-huh. It is, and they have their own rules. Once you answer in a certain way, mm-hmm. they will, and you will see a stall in the conversation. You know that it's not how this response should be. Mm-hmm. They have their own channels, and for us to deprive the younger generation from understanding this technology and its limits and what it has to offer is also wrong mm-hmm. because the whole world is driving towards that. We have robots that knows more about when we eat and when we have to have coffee than us. So I can't go and say that we should go to how we have human interaction before. We have to have emotional immunity, that we have to build it in our smaller circles. We cannot go backward and say we want to have more socially active community through live human interaction. It is not as easy as what the future has to offer. So we have to find alternative means for us to survive.
You're listening to Out There here on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. That was an interview with a sister of a friend. These interviews today are mostly anonymous, about people feeling invisible. Here's one more quick one from Marty Nathan.
I think that for many of us who care about humans and the Earth, there are a lot of powers that would like us to be invisible, and I feel that a lot. I think when you're in community, particularly in a good community like this, it's not so successful to make us feel invisible. I know many poor people, my patients and other people that I now feel a lot more invisible than I do. I think race, class, gender makes a lot of people invisible. And I'm okay enough that doesn't happen to me so much as it does to friends. But to all the people of the world, your substance matters.
All right, here's some Buffy St. Marie.
Playing boardwalk, he's
That was Buffy St. Marie with No No Keshegesh from the album Running for the Drum. I just looked up Keshegesh, and it means, it's what you call a little puppy who eats his own and then wants everybody else's. It means greedy guts. You're listening to Out There here on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. You can listen to archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5, followed by Democracy Now! At 5 o'clock. A couple of announcements. Let's see. We got First Night coming up on, I guess that would be Monday night, New Year's Eve, in downtown Northampton. 12 hours of events. You can go online somewhere to find out some more information about that, I'm sure. Also, lots of good concerts at Hawks and Reed up in Greenfield. Friday night, Saturday night, other nights. Okay, so on Saturday is the second annual Hamp Get Down at Hawks and Reed. Hamp Grown Cooperative is who it is. And it's a multi-stage indoor festival to celebrate the new year and the Western Massachusetts arts community. That's Saturday, December 29th at 7 p.m. at Hawks and Reed on Main Street in Greenfield. What else? Oh, here's a flyer I found today when I was doing downtown trash. I think I found it on the ground. But it's Hilltown Land Trust's fourth annual photo contest. And it's entitled The Lives of Individual Trees. You can submit your images of trees. There's an asterisk. We'll get to the asterisk in a minute. But submit your images of trees taken in a natural setting in a rural Massachusetts town west of the Connecticut River. Oh, it says by December 15th. Why didn't I read this flyer before I announced it? Well, the asterisk, the pictures of trees were in any stage of life, seeds, nuts, saplings, snags, etc. Well, I'll still take pictures of trees in my mind, in my mind's eye. When I saw that flyer, I thought about the tree in our backyard, the remains of the tree in our backyard, and images flashed through my head of that tree when we first looked at the house. It was this giant sugar maple tree full of leaves. It was May of 2005, and it had so many lush green leaves on it. And then since 2005, I've thought of images of that tree over the last 13 years as we've watched it die little by little, and then quite suddenly the last couple of years, and now it's just like a trunk about 15 feet tall, a few trunks cut off about 15 feet tall, and it's stripped of bark because we're planning on making some structure. And on the day of the solstice, when the sun was the lowest in the horizon that it was going to be, I looked in the backyard, and the shadow that the sun cast past the tree, it looked like the shadow of a saguaro cactus. Like we had this cactus in the backyard, I imagined. But it was just a dead maple tree. I say just, I don't know, the lives of trees. There's still some spirit there that will continue on. Here's another thing I found in the trash and recycling today, a little article in the Gazette about recognizing and overcoming bias. This article was specifically talking about drug addiction. It was written by Cherry Sullivan and Ian, I have no idea how to say their name, C-Y-R. I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs that Ian says about human bias. Human bias has been the focus of many scientific studies whose findings indicate that even well-intentioned people carry bias that is often unconscious. Every minute, our implicit thinking system processes millions of pieces of information and quickly categorizes it, attributing particular characteristics to a situation, group, or individual. This is a bias or stereotype, and it might be negative or positive toward an individual or group. This is essentially a safety strategy hardwired into our brains. In unfamiliar or rapidly changing situations, humans see only a thin slice of the whole picture, often filling the rest in with what they think should be there. This leap is often based on stereotypes, which may or may not be accurate. Our logical thinking system is more deliberate in processing information, leading to more thorough assessments. Decisions based on stigmas or stereotypes, positive or negative, can create unsafe, ineffective, and unjust approaches towards tackling drug addiction in our community. We should engage our logical thinking system to bring it into play when the implicit system takes over. They're particularly talking about police and how it relates to police dealing with people with drug addictions. So that almost does it for today's show. You've been listening to Out There. I think I said that a few times already. Stay tuned for Democracy Now, coming up at 5 o'clock. And I just found this CD in the radio station. It was on the shelf entitled Local, Tom Jurevich. The CD title is Altar of the Bottom Line. And the song I'm going to try and play is called Immigrants Like Me. And thanks for listening to the show today. Thanks for listening to all the shows on Valley Free Radio that you listen to and supporting independent radio in Northampton.
You see us in the morning, come out of the shadow. Workers who look a lot like me, work in the back rooms, the kitchens and the laundries, the places you don't see. We do the work nobody wants to. They have a better place to be. Oh, you just want us hidden in the shadows, in the place you made for immigrants like me. Make money to send home to our families. From our journeys, we've got debts to pay. So we work where we have to. We do what we need to make it. There is no other way. But we know just what you're doing. There is no mystery, no papers, no rules, and how you treat us in the place you made for immigrants like me. Up there on your high horse, you call me illegal, but I have hurt no one. All of the venom, you say I should not be here, but then how would all this work get done? We do so much to make this country go, but our work you do not see. Oh, you just want us hidden in the shadows, in the place you made for immigrants like me.